I'm pulling out the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time to drive to work. Okay, so today's topic is frames and borders. Very exciting stuff. So I'm going to talk about the history of frames and borders. I'm going to do my best to hit as many things as I can. There's a lot of things. I guarantee I will miss some things, but I'm doing my best to try to run through the history. Okay, so when magic begins way back in the beginning, one of the initial questions that Richard Garfield and Peter Atkinson and the other people that made magic in the beginning had was they were making a collectible. It was a game, and they wanted it to be a good game, but it was also a collectible. And one of the things they knew that was important was first printing. And they wanted to make sure that people could differentiate the first printing from future printing. So they knew they were going to reprint things. And so the idea they came upon was to use border. So the idea was that the first printing of the border, or first printing of the card, would be in a black border, and then future print, like reprints of the card, would be in a white border. Now, in the world that they lived in early Magic, mostly new sets had new cards would have black border. I do think there was the ability for you to have cards come back with new art, and then those would be black border, because it was first time printing in that art. But the idea is if I was reprinting a card where I'm not adding new elements to the card, like in the core sets, that would be in white border. So the idea was, like, limited edition came out. So alpha and beta were both part of what's called limited edition. Those were black border. And then came unlimited edition, and unlimited edition was in white border. So unlimited basically had the cards, with a few exceptions, that were in beta, but in a white border rather than a black border. And in early Magic, the cards existed in black and white border, and black border was more sought after than white border. One of the things that I did back in the day, because I cared a little bit more as a game than a collectible, so I would make trades with people to trade my black border, or sorry, my white border, not reverse, trade my black border card for their white border version of it, plus they'd add extra things in. So in early Magic, that was sort of an element of the different borders. And so for the first, many years of Magic, all the new sets, you know, would have black border, and then all the core sets would be in white border. Eventually, what we realized was that white border people didn't like white border as much as black border. White border is a little bit washes out the art a little bit. It just looks better with a black border than a white border. So eventually, somewhere around 8th edition, I think, we just said, we're just going to do black border. We stopped doing a white border. So other than the rare occasion, we've done one or two promos in white border. I think there's been some secret layers in white border. And we just announced, as of me taping this, Mystery Boosters 2, which has some white borders in it. Some cards in white border that had never been in white border before. Although I think in Mystery Booster 2, it does have the collector number, so it looks a little bit different than the old white border. The next border that came around was the Wizards made a product that printed one of every card limited / unlimited, one of every card. But they didn't want, because it's a collectible, they didn't want to just make too easy to get those cards. So they put them in a gold border. So what a gold border would mean was that it was commemorative, that they weren't for tournaments. And so that allowed us to print cards that might be hard to print. Another example of using the gold border was when we started the Pro Tour in 96, the very first Pro Tour in New York, we made decks for them. And we would later start doing them for the World Championships. And those decks always had a gold border because it allowed us to print the exact deck that they played. And at some point, we started having them sign the cards and the cards were signed. And anyway, so gold border is sort of commemorative. Then we made the silver border. So silver border was first created in Unglued. And it at the time, what it meant was not for tournament play, only for casual play. That would change over time. Commander ended up not including the silver border, so silver border is kind of... Originally, the idea of silver border was for casual play, and now it's kind of like not for format play. You can rule zero them in, obviously, in Commander games, but they're not they're not allowable without rule zeroing them in. And then in Unstable, we introduced the no border, both contraptions, and we made lands that went all the way to the edge. There was no border on them, borderless lands, which are very pretty. In fact, by the way, I try to do that for Unhinged. When we were looking at lands for Unhinged, the second of the unsets, I had two versions, one of which had a very skinny border and one of which had no border. And that too many people, like everyone felt like the no border was just a bridge too far, so we did the skinny border. But when we came back from Unstable, I said, oh, I like the no border, so we did the no border. So both contraptions and the lands went all the way up. There was no border, there was no border at all. It went up to the frame of the card. That requires special printing, by the way. I mean, we can do it, but it requires a certain kind of sheet and stuff. And then finally, Secret Lair has been messing around a little bit with other color borders. So the one that it did is it has a red border on the Secret Lair Burning Revelations. So anyway, we have definitely, there are a lot of borders. We've messed around with a lot of borders. And so those are the various borders so far that exist. Frames, my friend, is a much more complex situation. So I'm going to talk about frames. So when I talk about frames, I literally mean when we make a magic card, for example, we have to have a frame because we layer the rules text on top. Like there's text that gets layered on it. But behind it, the frame itself has to be designed. Okay, so when Alpha first came out, we had the following frames. Each color had two different frames. It had a creature frame because it had to have the power toughness box on it, and it had a non-creature frame. We then, artifacts had their own frame because at the time artifacts were all colorless. So there was an artifact frame and there was a frame for artifact creatures. And then there was a frame for land. And I believe those 13 frames were what Magic started with. We would later, sort of as Magic evolves, we will start adding other frames. The first one that is obvious to me was the third expansion for Magic was Legends. Legends introduced multicolor cards. Well, what does a multicolor card look like? So basically what happened was we decided to make them, decided to make them gold. Gold represented more than one color. Okay, next up, in 1998, Unglued came out. It was the very first unset. So one of the things Unglued did is really started experimenting with lots of elements of the card, frame being one of them. For example, for the very first time, there were token cards in packs. There were full art lands. There was BFM, which was so big it was on two cards. There was a left half and a right half. There were cards that were oriented sideways. There were cards where the art box was smaller than normal or bigger than normal. We really sort of played around a lot with the shape because the way Unglued got made is each card was literally designed unto itself. So it sort of, it didn't have a standardized frame, which allowed us to do a lot of experimentation with it. So interestingly, the first, what I would say, the major change of frames came because of Unglued. So Unglued 2, came out, big fanfare. Unglued 2 got put on the schedule. We made it, but then we ended up choosing not to print it. So Unglued 2 never got printed. We did get art and stuff. We got pretty far in the process. One of the things that I had made for Unglued 2 were split cards. BFM was the most popular card in Unglued, so I was just doing the reverse. If people like a card so big it's on two cards, how about a card so small that two of them fit in one card? And the idea being this card is one of those two things. You can cast either one. Split cards were very controversial when I introduced them because they looked different. It did not look like a normal Magic card. I mean, they did look like little miniature Magic cards, but still, a split card was a deviation. And in early Magic, we didn't really deviate that much. As you will see, with time, we got much more comfortable with deviating with frames. But other than the kind of the un-experimentation, which was meant to be a weird thing, we really didn't do a lot with it. Like, even full art lands took forever to get into normal Magic. Okay, another thing that happens roughly around this time is the 8th edition, which is a core set. One of the things that we realized was when the cards were first made, a lot of decisions were made that were very fanciful and flavorful and made the cards feel like a fantasy frame. But there was a lot of impracticality to it. It was white text on a darker background. The font was called Medieval Gaudi. It was hard to read. So we decided with 8th edition that we were going to redo the card frame. So we updated it. It uses a font called Valerian, I believe. Or I'm not sure if 8th edition started with Valerian. It now has Valerian. Valerian might have been added when we did 2015, now that I think of it. But anyway, we changed the font. We changed the look of the cards. The art box got a little bit bigger. We just changed a lot of components of it. And at some point, I'm not sure whether it happened with this set exactly, we started doing pin lines. One of the things we actually talked about for 8th edition was changing the gold cards. So the idea we had pitched, one of the weird things about gold cards is, gold cards at the time told you nothing about what color they were. That if it was a white-black card or a red-green card, they both looked the same. So we had actually pitched a frame for two-color cards where half the frame was one color and half the frame was the other color. Now, obviously, we didn't end up using that for multicolor, but later when we made hybrid, we borrowed those frames. I'll get to hybrid in a second. But anyway, we started doing pin lines on gold cards. We also, originally lands didn't have pin lines. The lands, in fact, of what we had done in Alpha was there was a texture behind the rules text that was two colors to sort of tell you what colors they were. So we started doing pin lines that sort of told you one pin line was one color, one pin line was the other color. We only did that for two color cards, but still, it really helped communicate that. Okay, so next, we get to Champions of Kamigawa. So we were trying to come up with some cool, new, different thing. We ended up with what we called flip cards. Richard Knight made these. Flip cards were cards that you played as one side. The way they look is they have an art box in the middle, and then two different rule text boxes that are oriented each way. And so you play it for the side that has the mana cost, but then you can flip it at some point or certain conditions, and you turn it upside down, and now it has the text on the other side. Once again, the unset did mess in this space a little bit. But so it was the first time we had done something like that. The art looked a little bit different. It kind of, depending on the orientation, had two pieces of art in the art box. But anyway, once again, it was us really sort of showing that, like flip cards, hey, there's functionality in frames and having new frames. So sometimes around here, also, Magic 2015, and maybe I'm jumping a little bit ahead, Magic 2015 would be another shift in what the card frame looked like, not nearly as severe as the 8th edition change. The other thing about the 8th edition change I didn't mention, there were a few things. Probably the biggest change was artifacts originally had a brown frame in the original frame, and when we changed it, we went from brown to silver. The reason we did that was lands was also brown, and they were a little bit too similar to each other, so we were differentiating between them. The early version of 8th edition Mirrodin, we tried for a while having black and white mana symbols in rules text. People hated it. It was hard to read, so we stopped doing it, but we did it for a short period. Okay. We got to Ravnica, original Ravnica. That is where hybrid shows up for the first time. Like I said, we used the frames we had made as an attempt to change multicolor. Also, split cards came back. But, definitely we were sort of experimenting more. I think so. The interesting thing is I took over as head designer in Ravnica. I'm the guy that made split cards. I'm the guy that made flip cards. I definitely am someone who... And I made the uncard. So, up before I became head designer, if you look at every single time we had done something where we designed a new kind of frame to facilitate a new kind of design, I was in on it. And so when I became head designer, I really pushed the idea that, look, this is just a tool in our toolbox. We should be less afraid to use it. And I think with the success of Hybrid ended up being very popular. For a while, it was the highest rated mechanic, in quotes, that we'd ever made. It was very, very popular. Okay, next up in Future Sight, following year, we were teasing the future. And one of the things we teased was a colored artifact, Sarcomite Mirror. So for the first time, we made an artifact that was a color. That would go on to be a tool. Now, that wasn't really, I mean, it was one frame for Sacrament Mirror, but that would go on to end up being 10 new frames, because you need one for each color non-creature, one for each color creature. It had a similar texture to it, so once again, the blue creature and non-creature looked similar except for the power toughness. But anyway, we had to design those, so that introduced that, and that would be, it would come back in Shards of Alara for the Esper Shard. We used it in New Phyrexia, and then it just became something that we started using very regularly. After Kaladesh broke things, we started saying, okay, we really have to make use of colored artifacts more. Then, the following year, the very next set, is Lorwyn. Lorwyn introduces the Planeswalkers, a brand new card type. And unlike other card types, this card type looked different. It had, one of the things we did is we bled the art behind it, so the art ratio was different. We hadn't done that before, and it was pretty exciting. Anyway, we were making a brand new card, so we decided to make a brand new frame. The way Planeswalkers look is unlike any other card. Originally, by the way, Planeswalkers were going to premiere in Future Sight on the Future Shifter cheat, but we didn't get them done in time, so we ended up pushing back to Lorwyn. Okay, then we get to Rise of the Eldrazi. So the following after Lorwyn I jumped ahead. The Future Sight, then there was Lorwyn. After Lorwyn was Shards of Alara. After Shards of Alara was Zendikar. So the third set in Zendikar was Rise of the Eldrazi. That actually introduced two sets. It turns out there's a designer that loved alternate frames as much as I did, Brian Tinsman. So he made a set with two. So first off, we did colorless. So the Eldrazi show up for the first time. They are colorless, they're not artifacts, but they're colorless. So we had to make a colorless frame. Kind of inspired by the Planeswalkers, we make it a full art ratio, so it goes behind the art. And so we do that. And then also they make levelers. Levelers are creatures to match the adventure theme of Zendikar that they level up, much like, you know, D&D characters do. And there are three different sort of text boxes, each with their own power toughness. And the idea is as you sort of indicate as you level up what level you're at. Okay. The following, Kamigawa block, we had Scars of Mirrodin block, then we get to Innistrad block. So Innistrad block introduces double-face cards. It's not really that double-face cards look all that different. I mean, the back frame is unique in that it doesn't have a mana cost, so it looks a little bit different. We have to introduce the color signifier. Transforming DFCs get introduced in Innistrad. Then, later in that block, in Avacyn Restored, Brian Tinsman makes another frame. So, we had talked about making a card that had a trigger when you drew it. In fact, we go all the way back to Original Tempest. We tried to do the Original Tempest with... And at that time, we messed around with, what if we had a different card back? So, the idea that Brian and team came up... I was on the team, actually. Came up with for Miracles. The idea of a miracle is the turn you draw it, you can reveal it, and then it costs less the turn you draw it. But we wanted to make sure that it was clear that it was, from a functional standpoint, we wanted to know when you draw a miracle that it was clear you drew a miracle. That you, the person drawing it, oh, it's a miracle. So we added a frame that had some sort of white streaks to it that just make it clear that it's a miracle. And once again, as you can see here, we're starting to up the number of different frames. We're becoming much more... we are becoming more comfortable, the audience is becoming more comfortable with having more frames. So next up, we get to Theros. So Theros introduces enchantment creatures. Magic had artifact creatures from the very beginning, but we had not had enchantment creatures. Because we want to differentiate them, we want to make sure you understand, we made a new frame that was sort of Nyx-inspired for enchantment creatures in Theros. When enchantment creatures came back, we would use that again. We definitely like the idea of when you're a creature and you're an additional thing, the frame sort of helps you understand what you are. The one other thing that we made, I don't know where the first one showed up. We did make a land creature in Dryad Arbor So we had to make a frame that was a land and a creature. That counts. Next up in Battle for Zendikar, we made the Devoid mechanic. That was colorless cards that had a colored mana cost. And so just to give a little bit of the feel of the Eldrazi to them, they have a special frame. Now that's a good example where the frame change is less about mechanical needs and more about flavor needs. A lot of the early changes were like, hey, mechanically it has to work this way. We're starting to get the idea that, oh, sometimes a frame change, A, it can communicate something, but there could also be creative elements that it helps reinforce something, and that making the Devoid frames feel Eldrazi-ish is part of that. Okay, then we get to Eldritch Moon, where we introduce Meld. So like I said, BFM had been in Unglued. It had a left side and a right side. We had tried to figure out how to bring that. It became one of Ken Nagel's goals, how to get this to normal magic outside of the unsets. And he finally realized that double-faced technology, that transforming double-faced cards were the key. That you could play two cards on the battlefield, and when they were both on the battlefield together, you would transform both of them, and they would turn over and then click together into a giant card. So Meld was just us taking that technology of making a big card out of two small cards. Next up, we get to Kaladesh. We introduce vehicles. Vehicles are artifacts that can turn into creatures. And so it had a rule toughness box, but we didn't want you to confuse it with an artifact creature that just normally is a creature. So it has a special frame so you can identify it as a vehicle. Also want to mention that during Kaladesh, we started doing masterpieces. I think they were inventions, Kaladesh inventions, I think they were called. But the idea is we started doing special treatments that looked different. When I get to Throne of Eldraine, I'll start talking about Showcase. But that was the precursor of us trying to make special cards that looked different with unique frames that you could collect. When we get to Dominaria, we have sagas. So sagas are representing stories inspired by a combination of a mechanical structure that Richard had made for original Ravnica that we didn't use, and planeswalkers that were inspired by structures. So the early version of planeswalkers, instead of you choosing what to do, just went through a pattern. Turn one, turn two, turn three, then went back to turn one. And we realized that while it took away the agency from planeswalker, it fit the idea of a story. I'm going to tell you a story. Well, here's what's going to happen. And there'll be different chapters over turns. We also did a cool thing with sagas where we made a vertical rules text box and a vertical art box. So they take up the whole run of the card, but one takes the left side. The text box is on the left side, and the art is on the right side. We also did some cool thing with the art. The art also always represents the story that's being told through the means of art native to the world that it's being told in. Oh, can we get to Throne of Eldraine? So, two things. First off, showcases start there, what we call booster fun. So we start showing off different frames. And we also had the adventure mechanic. Adventure mechanic allowed you to cast a spell. It was a permanent, and Throne of Eldraine is always a creature. The mechanic allows you to have a permanent. And then so you could either cast the spell from your hand or cast the permanent from your hand. But if you cast the spell, you exile it and then can cast the permanent from exile. But in order to do that, we need to make a new frame. The new frame had a little magic card on it. It was very cool. In Modern Horizons 1, so we'd introduce snow-covered lands were first introduced in Ice Age, way back in, 94? 95. The snow-covered lands might have had a slightly different frame, maybe. But anyway, we brought it back in Cold Snap. It was sort of the Lost Ice Age, set, I put that in quotes. But then when Modern Horizons brought snow back, we got the idea of making snow permanents, and I believe the snow frame started there. I don't think Cold Snap had the snow frame. I think we started that in Modern Horizons 1. We were just more willing as we got farther along to do more frames. Then in Zendikar Rising, we introduced the modal double face card. That is more like a split card where each side is castable. Now, once again, some of these frame changes, while technically being new, aren't super different, but slightly different. Then in Dungeons & Dragons Adventures in Forgotten Realm, we introduced classes. Classes were kind of like sagas, except the art, instead of being on the right side, is on the left side. And there's different elements of the rules text box to show different levels of the classes. Kind of inspired by the level mechanic I talked about from Rise of the Eldrazi, but designed a little bit differently. Next, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. We, for the first time, you saw a Phyrexianized Planeswalker. So technically that had its own frame, and we saw more Phyrexian Planeswalkers as the Phyrexian story went along. Then we get to Brothers War. Brothers War had a mechanic called Prototype. So Prototype were artifacts. Usually they were expensive. They were colorless. But for a cost, usually a colored cost, I'm sure not 100%, but usually a colored cost, you could cast the card. They were always artifact creatures, and you could cast it cheaper, but it was a smaller power and toughness. So you got the creature cheaper, like usually for colored mana, but it required, but it became in it. So the text box had to have two different power toughness things, one for the normal one and one for the prototype. Also around this time, Unfinity came out. Actually, Unfinity came out a little bit before. Unfinity had hosted Augment, which were mechanics where hosts looked mostly like a new Magic card, except that his text box was split. And then when you played an Augment on a host, you covered up some portion of the card, and between them you made a new card that had that used the elements of the Augment in addition to what the host was, to sort of make a brand new card. That was in Unstable. Unstable also had, I mentioned earlier about the four lands and the contraptions. They had the contraption frames. Contraptions had a different back because it didn't go in your deck. Unfinity would introduce attractions that also don't go in your deck, have a different back. They have a different frame. There's little numbers that light up to give you information about what gets activated when you roll a die. Next up, in March of the Machine, we introduce Battles. Battles is a new card type, so they look a little bit different. The big thing on Battles is they, at least the front part of Battles, are sideways. Some controversial talks on this. I had done a sideways card way back in Unglued, and we had talked many, many times of doing something oriented sideways. Battles was one where we finally did it. The reason we did it is we wanted to show the scoping, this battle, and landscape stuff allows you to sort. It just looks a little bit better. Other things we've done. In Murders of Karlov Manor, we did cases. Cases are kind of similar in frame to classes. They have art on. Is art on the right? On classes, the art is on the left. On cases, I think the art is also on the left on cases, to be different from sagas. So cases are something that when you solve it, you unlock something. And so they sort of give you the thing by which you have to unlock it. And then we did Spree in Outlaws of Thunder Junction. Spree was interesting in that we had additive things in the rules text, meaning it was a modal spell where you paid extra things. So what we did is we made a symbol next to the mana cost, which is something we've talked about doing forever. We keep talking about, do we want a symbol that says this cost might not be representative of the full cost? There's a lot of stuff like morph and things that have a different cost that if you just watch the upper right, maybe you can play things, you know, and we've talked about that for a long time. During Odyssey, we had made a little symbol that was a graveyard symbol that represented the card had an ability that was usable in the graveyard. We had originally planned, by the way, to have that being an ongoing thing, but when we made 8th edition, 8th edition frames couldn't handle it at the time, so it ended up being just an Odyssey block thing. The other change we made, and I'm not even sure where this one happened, we at some point changed the legendary frame. They put the little crown on it, so that you would know that it's a legendary creature. One of the things that's very interesting over time is, to wrap this up, is I think we have realized as time has gone on that frames can do a lot of really good work. It can allow us to give reminders. It can allow us to shape things in a way that just makes the cards easier to play. A lot of times the frame can can help you understand what's going on. And so we really see the frames as a tool that we can use. Borders are more about giving you the player information about what the utility of the card is, mostly how we use borders. But frames have a lot wider. And like I said, sometimes we do frame things that's more about flavor than necessarily just about mechanics. Although, usually the reason we make a new frame is about mechanics. It's not about flavor. But from time to time, we find elements of flavor. There are a lot of other things I did not get into. For example, watermarks, for example. We can put pictures behind the text box, and while watermark can't matter in normal Magic, it can matter in cards. But we've used that for factioning and to sort of tell you, you know, there's a lot of elements of visual elements. The other thing that we've done is we've done a lot more with symbols. Obviously, when Magic started, there was the 5-mana symbols and the colorless mana symbol, the colorless generic symbol. We later would make a colorless mana symbol. We would make a tap symbol. And then we started making symbols that were not evergreen symbols, like energy or like the paw print, where it represented a mechanical component, and it was an easier way to do that. So like I said, there's lots of visual components. We have a team that helps us, that helps design these things, and more as we make Magic sets, important part of understanding is what are the visual components? How are we using frames? You know, what are we doing with them? And over time, we've done a lot of things. As I said today, I am sure I missed things. I tried to be as thorough as I could, but I'm one man and there's a lot of Magic sets. So I apologize for the things that I know that I missed. But anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed this look through borders and frames. But I'm now at work. So we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking Magic, it's time for me to be making Magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.